It's 12.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, the weekly mortgage market update, providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
To have you be with us. It is April 9th, and we are racing through another year, and we have got so much on the calendar that's coming ahead, but we appreciate you tuning in and being with us each and every week as we talk about the issues that are affecting our industry. And this week, we're going to be talking about, that's right, we're going into that topic. You're not supposed, what's the two things you're never supposed to talk when you're in a group, in a mixed group? Religion and politics. We're going to keep religion out of the focus. At least who knows? We may be bringing it later on. But we're going to be getting into politics, talking about how politics is affecting our industry, how it's going to affect our industry. We're going to have a great discussion on that with our regulars later on in the program. But we are going to start off the program at the top of the program, getting an update on the conferences that are coming up from the MBA. So we have a special guest on. It's good to have him. Hopefully he's going to be on a regular basis giving us conference updates. But Norm Edwards with the MBA is on the phone with us. And Norm, we thought we'd start off with you giving us an update on some of the upcoming conferences. Good to have you with us, Norm.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, David.
You bet. We've got a couple conferences coming up. But the first one is the tech conference, is it not, Norm?
Yes, we have actually, there's going to be two conferences taking place at the same time in Phoenix, Arizona, at the Arizona Biltmore. The dates on these programs, April 22nd through the 25th. And we've got our National Technology and Mortgage Banking Conference and Expo, and also our National Fraud Issues Conference. So they'll be running concurrently. And with registration to either one of the conferences, you have the benefit of attending both conferences.
Oh, so, that's a great idea.
You'll be able to get an update on everything from technology and what's taking place in the area of fraud prevention and QA, QC. So it's a really good program.
So there's a two-for-one special going on at the MBA on the conference. Go to one conference or both of the same city, and that is in the Scottsdale area, actually, Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah.
And which hotel are they at, Norm?
It's at the Biltmore Hotel in Phoenix, Arizona.
Both conferences are at the same hotel. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
And who are some of the speakers that we have lined up or that you have lined up for these two conferences?
You know, we've got quite a lineup. We've got our president and CEO. He's going to give a lay of the land on the industry. David Stevens.
Yeah.
We've got Michael Trancoso, senior counsel with the California Department of Justice. He's going to talk about the AG settlement as well as a few other issues that California is working on alongside other AGs nationwide. And we've got a special session on leadership with Steve Wiley, president of the Lincoln Leadership Institute at Gettysburg.
Wow.
That's a joint session for both fraud and the technology attendees.
What day is that? That leadership session.
The leadership session is 8:30 a.m. Monday, April 23rd.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the first full day of the program, and you know, the audience. I think it's going to be really great. I don't know if you're aware of the Gettysburg Institute, but they do a great job in terms of showing you how you can lead, and it's kind of like leadership from the perspective of the soldiers and the officers at the Gettysburg battle.
Excellent. I'm going to definitely be there. In fact, we're going to be doing a broadcast from the tech conference, the technology conference. You've invited me to do so, and I'm going to be doing that. So looking forward to that, but I'm not going to want to miss that leadership session. Tell us a little bit about the tech conference, what we are going to be, what you're going to be highlighting at the tech conference, technology conference?
Well, for the technology conference, we've got a CIO panel, Mortgage Headwinds, featuring some top CIOs from various companies. One of the people we want to talk about, Robert Lux, he's with Freddie Mac. He's a chief information officer with Freddie Mac. We've got Gary Ives, CIO from Pulte Mortgage, Tom Elkins with Prime Lending.
Yeah.
Yep, and Ling Long He with Quicken Loans. So it's a great lineup.
Good lineup.
And,
Great lineup. And we got another conference coming up, the annual secondary conference in New York. I'm going to be at that one as well. Very excited about the lineup of speakers you have there. Tell us a little bit about that conference, Norm, and the date.
Well, that conference is taking place May 6th through the 9th in New York City at the Marriott Marquis. And, yeah, we're really excited about this program. And I think you'll find great value in attending the program. We will start off with quite a lineup for the opening general session, which includes Louis Ranieri. And
yes.
For those of you in the business, I'm sure you recognize the name Lou Ranieri, chairman and founding partner of Ranieri Partners. We will also have on that opening session Raj Date with the CFPB and Richard Dorfman with the Securities Industry Association. And that's going to be a really good session. Now, the other one that I want to bring to your attention, our second general session, which is kind of a departure from what we have done in the past, which typically features the GSEs. But, you know, with the marketplace the way it is, and lenders out there looking for ways to sell their business and ways to find new channels for securitization, this session gives you just that. It gives you alternatives to traditional securitization channels. It will feature Byron Boston, president of Dynex Capital, Lori Goodman. I'm sure many of you have read a lot of the things from Lori with Amherst Security. Jim Lockhart, vice chairman with W.L. Ross & Company, and Scott Simon, managing director with PIMCO.
Great lineup, Norm. I've listened to Lori. She is just so fascinating. And it's really interesting that you're going to be focusing in and bringing back the private securitization markets. That is very exciting. And for many of you, many people don't know, but Lou Ranieri is the investor in New Penn Financial, acquired that company, and is doing some products, out-of-agency products, that is very encouraging. So that's a great lineup, and this is a must-attend conference, Norm.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. If you if you're out there and you're working to get your business going and get the mortgage markets back on track, this is the place to be. This is the place to get your deals made. It's definitely a business meeting. There's going to be a lot of wheeling and dealing taking place during that conference, and that's one of the biggest value that we offer in terms of that program.
Norm, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day to get on the broadcast with us and sharing what's going on at these conferences. We'd like to have you back as we get closer to the secondary marketing conference, Norm, because I want to talk more about that, because it's really significant that people be there and be aware of this conference because of the focus and attention on bringing back the private markets. Norm, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to the next time.
I look forward to having you back on soon. Appreciate it. Have a great day, and we'll see you in Phoenix, Norm.
All right. See you. Have a great day.
Thank you. We appreciate Norm coming on. We appreciate all our friends at the MBA. And, Joe, I think it's exciting just the fact that they're really focusing on bringing back the secondary markets and trying to get, you know, we've all been concerned. I mean, the amount of product that the agencies are getting and FHA and Ginnie Mae are getting, it's we've got to bring it back. So that's a great topic. But let's talk about what's going on in the markets right now, Joe. Give us an update.
Yeah.
What's going on today?
Hey, Dave. MBS prices are up today, 6:30, and the Dow's down. You'll remember Friday we had a disappointing jobs report and the stock markets weren't open. So today's down day is started out even more lower than it is right now. But the stock market's using this morning to react to that jobs report. The MBS market reacted to the report on Friday as it was still open. In fact,
let's get into last week. I mean, there was another interesting week.
It was beginning with the important jobs report. You know, everyone has probably heard by now we came up short of expectations. 120,000 jobs when 200,000 were expected. And mortgage-backed security prices rose over half a point on that news. Unemployment rate fell to 8.2%, but unfortunately that wasn't due to improving jobs. It was just more people getting out of the market. So last Friday was a big day. It was also a short day, and I think there were fewer people in the market trading, so it created a little extra volatility. But we're continuing today, continues Friday's improvement. Last week was volatile. I mean, earlier in the week, MBS prices fell almost as much as they gained on Friday following the release of the Fed minutes. Investors read the minutes to say that QE3 is not as likely. And so Tuesday, immediately upon their release, the market fell and fell hard about, like I said, about half a point. Wednesday and Thursday, we recovered some of that. And so for the week, we were up pretty nicely, given Friday's big improvement. All the other economic data that came out was not very important in that there were a lot of mixed signals. Some were better than others. Some were worse than expected. And we talked a lot about the March 13th statement after the Fed meeting, and that caused a big drop in prices. The drop people thought might be the start of the end for low rates, but in fact, we've since recovered all that drop and more. In fact, we're about a half a point from being as good as MBS prices have ever been. So we've seen a nice little turnaround, and we are up again.
That is amazing. Well, what do you see? I say the calendar this coming week is Thursday. When I'm looking over your notes real fast, I want to make sure you zero on any major market movers that we've got coming up this week.
Well, the inflation reports come out. The PPI is out on Thursday, and CPI is out on Friday.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is.
And then, it could be significant, but Treasury auctions coming out Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, especially the 10-year on Wednesday and the 30-year on Thursday. And then, we can't take our eyes off of Europe. Spain and Portugal yields on their debt remain elevated, and concerns remain out there, and those concerns could get better or worse, and that could drive MBS prices. So we've recovered. We're back at very good rates, and people ought to have lots of customers out there that are interested in refinancing and taking advantage of these very low rates.
What's interesting, though, is last week, Joe, we thought this was going to there was going to be no surprises from the Fed minutes that came
out.
You
had to bring that up, didn't you, Dave?
Yeah, it's not that there's a point
in
that.
I said it. I didn't think the minutes would reveal a thing new. The Fed statement came out, and Bernanke came out trying to explain things, which caused people to think maybe QE3 was more likely. And the markets rallied. I was very surprised that the statement made that big an impact on the market.
Well, it drives home the point. You and your partners there at MBS Quoteland are staring at the screen, reading news services constantly. I mean, I don't know how anyone gets along without your service in this kind of volatile market. But even when you guys who are there observing it get a sense of where things are going and you think we're in solid ground, that you don't anticipate movement, it just goes to the point. You can't live without
MBS solutions out there to give you the what's going on, and you know, it just proves that it this is not an easy market to predict. So I mean, I didn't mean to bring it up from the standpoint
yeah.
of calling attention to what you had said, but it was more of a drive home the point. You can't live without a service like this, so we appreciate it. Joe, thanks
so much
for bringing us an update
sure.
each and every week, and be sure to say hi to your staff there that works with you. Appreciate your whole team and all that you do. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back. Remember, we're going to be talking about politics and what it's going to be doing to our mortgage industry. Getting some interesting outlooks. Even on the pre-call, we are just starting to get into some of the different thoughts and opinions that are out there. It's just really exciting. I can't wait to get into that discussion. But one thing is for certain, we're living with politics, the results of politics involved in our business, and that's regulation. It shows up in the form of regulation. Alice Alvey is driving, and she's mobile with us, but we're going to be talking to Alice, talking with her about in Indiana and then in Detroit. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Alice, good to have you with us. Thanks for dialing in and being a part of the broadcast. What do you have for us today on the legislative update?
Hey, thanks, Dave. I just want to assure everybody I am not actually driving at this moment.
Okay.
I did pull over. So now I have my notes, my iPad. I'm all good to go with being able to give everybody the update here. Hey, I just wanted to – I'm going to have well, I know Joe might have had some questions, too, as I go through a couple of these points. And the first thing I want to help everybody out with is FHA's mortgagee letter 1203. So – this one we reported on back when it came out, and I was telling everybody then, this was a game changer when it came to collection accounts and disputed accounts. And for those of you who've known FHA forever, you know that since the beginning of time, FHA's policy has been we don't require that collection accounts be paid in full. And disputed accounts had this minor policy about, you know, anything over 500 and in the last 2 years. And that disputed accounts piece was really brought to us through what we call Jerry Mayer emails, because HUD sends out this email to everybody with, you know, from Jerry Mayer, and we all get them all the time with all the FHA updates. Well, this mortgagee letter now put in a cap. It put in a timeline. It really started to treat collection accounts the same as disputed accounts. We all know a disputed account is very different from a collection. I mean, a customer could be paying on time. And therefore, you know, they're not the same. And FHA came out and said anything more in aggregate or individual of $1,000 or more on a credit report and within the last 2 years, these had to be resolved. And the resolve was paid in full or established a 3-month payment history. Well, if I have a loan trying to close, I don't have time to go get a 3-month payment history. So there were lots of meetings on both sides. NAMB was out there, you know, advertising that they were the ones in the front to get this postponed. I know the Mortgage Bankers Association was also working on this as well. And there really was a big industry outcry. Who knows, Dave? Maybe because people heard about it on our show, too, right?
Yeah, so. I would like to think that.
So sure. Anyway, the bottom line right now is I can't find the actual notice from FHA, but people are quoting this in their blogs that it is an FHA notice that says this is now postponed until July 1st. But when you go to FHA's website, there isn't the formal notice on their site. So I think this has kind of been passed around, and I always like to get it straight from the horse's mouth, you know, so I want everybody to realize from what we're hearing, it looks like this mortgagee letter has been postponed. And I'll certainly want to verify that. I'll put that up on our website, too, once we know for sure it's confirmed. But anyway, so they're saying that it is going to be delayed, but that's not enough. We're saying that there's a lot of issues that have to get resolved with that mortgagee letter in implementation and the negative impact to consumers. We had a customer yesterday when I was trying to, or on Friday, I was speaking out at the Mississippi Mortgage Bankers Convention last week, and she already had to try and implement this. Had a customer call up to pay off a collection account, and the creditor said, sorry, I'm not going to take your money. Because they'd already charged it off. Right, so now what do I do? How do I document that one? They were looping in medical collections. So for those of you who deal on a file level, this is a very big deal, and we're going to there's lots of issues to get ironed out. So we'll be watching that for you. Did you have a question on that one, Dave?
Nope. Alice, hey, I'm going to jump to Joe. Joe, I thought I could just feel Joe had a question.
Well, also included was to be an increase in the upfront from 1 to 175, and the 10 basis point increase in the annual. Is all that part of the same notice, and is that too delayed?
Great distinction, Joe. The notice that they're quoting only talks about these miscellaneous underwriting provisions and does not, the MIP is changing. So that there is no relief for the MIP changes that I'm aware of. These this blogging is just about the underwriting changes.
Okay.
Okay. So thank you for making me clarify that. Another bill, H.R. 4264, is a FHA fiscal solvency bill. My presentation that I was doing for the Mississippi Mortgage Bankers Association was on FHA and, you know, trying to illustrate to people. The fund is in trouble if you look at that 2% capital ratio that they're supposed to have. You know, they have about $31 billion in reserves, but they don't have the extra 2% set aside like they're supposed to. So there is this bill out there to allow the MIP ceiling for the annual MIP to be increased even more, and the bill is proposing to give it a ceiling of 2%. We're now already at 1.25%, so this is a big jump. Big bit of room. For those of you who aren't sure, is this our last MIP increase for this year? I don't count on it. And according to the bills and the activity that we're seeing, it looks like Congress wants FHA to do more, have more room to raise premiums. The bill also talks about requiring a semi-annual actuarial report, because once a year just isn't enough when the fund is in trouble. We also see bills out there, you know, that people are concerned, is FHA the next bailout? So there's a Senate bill out there to prohibit the Treasury from funneling money out the back door to FHA. So it's definitely getting some attention. I forgot to mention Congress is on recess till April 16th, so there won't be any movement on this stuff for at least another week. And then, Dave, as we talked about, wanted to give everybody a HARP 2.0 update. And in my customer, talking with my customers, they're not getting a lot of traction on this because it's really tough to find a place to sell it. Some of my customers have a place to go up to 140% LTV. Others have up to 200%. A lot of times that's if it's your own portfolio. There's nobody doing unlimited unless it's their own stuff they are already holding that I can find anyway. So it really seems to be locked down still, and Congress, again, sent a letter, and there is trying to get a letter. The Senate Banking Committee sent a letter to FIFA to try and say, hey, can you adjust this some more, because everybody's worried about buybacks. I mean, the number one reason for buybacks is appraisals, your number one biggest exposure. So, you know, there's just no traction on HARP 2.0 yet. A couple other things. House Bill 4323 is a big one, too. This is a Consumer Mortgage Choice Act. I'm in favor of this, folks. We have a big problem here in Michigan and a big part of the Midwest where loan amounts are low. And Fannie and Freddie are subject to, for purchases and refis, you know, this 5% tolerance in points and in the 8% HOPA tolerances. Well, this is Fannie and Freddie are including everything. They're including all points. They're calling any points bona fide points. So they're calling even if you have lender-paid costs, those are getting rolled in. And a lot of deals are getting triggered as being a high-priced mortgage loan or a HOPA loan as we have so many big chunks of the country in lower price ranges. So there does seem to be some congressional action to try and relieve or clarify the definition of points that are getting included in these caps, because we find lenders being super conservative on that, and it's hurting housing big time in several markets. And then last but not least, I'm going to let you know, Dodd-Frank, we have a little bit of breathing room at the moment because they're really focused on all the SEC side of the business. But you should expect in the next 2 months at the most, as my guess, that we're going to see the loan officer compensation proposal coming out and then the final rule or a legitimate proposed rule for the new combined GSE and TIL, because they've got to get those out within the next 6 months. And the comment period is, you know, and response time is going to be needed. So those are going to come out soon. So, phew,
and
I think that's everything.
So there's a lot there. Appreciate you bringing up. Any sense on a lot of the examinations coming out of CFPB? There's been, you know, there's been a lot of talk and there's been rumors running that they're really training a lot of examiners to be getting out into the industry. Any thoughts or any feedback you've heard?
You know, the only thing I'm starting to hear more about in its initial is the fair lending reviews and that approach.
Right.
And a heads up I'll give to folks is you have to have something in writing if your approved eligible loans out of automated underwriting are not closing. If, you know, because we all know the computers can't do everything and can't assess all the risks. And there are plenty of times an underwriter looks at the file and goes, this is not right. But we see auditors looking at things differently and really saying, wait a minute, if the system said it was approved, how come you didn't close it? How come you didn't think it was approved and you wanted all this extra paperwork? We all know we have to do that to protect our risks, but you've got to have policies in writing is my point.
Yeah, I think there's we need to have a whole broadcast just talking about as they get ready to come out, what is it that we need to do as lenders to be prepared for the onslaught of these exams that are beginning to happen or will begin to happen at some point in time. There's a lot on the CFPB's plate, so I guess if there's any good thing, it's they're a little bit distracted trying to get everything else implemented, and there's certainly a lot of bills on that. Alice, I'm looking forward to being with you this week. It's very exciting. We'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later in the broadcast. Thank you so much, and stay parked because we got to have you involved in the rest of the broadcast. We'll be right back, folks, after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us. Stay tuned all the way through the broadcast. Alice talked about how Congress is doing this and that. Folks, politics is involved in our business far greater than we have ever wanted. If they're involved in our business, it's time for us to get involved in politics. We're going to be talking about that later in the broadcast. Each and every week, we bring the Prophet Doctor to the radio. He boldly pulls himself away from the broadcast or from his computer because he's working so hard, making so many companies so profitable, and he takes time to join us. And we've been running a series of question and Q&A sessions, and because we might as well find out what you guys want to find out from the Prophet Doctor. So you know, get your questions loaded up. Now, we've got a bunch of them already in the queue, Prophet Doctor, that we're going to get into, and it's one of the topics Tony Garitano's been wanting to get into. It's talking about ROI. So, Prophet Doctor, I'm going to turn on the mic for Tony Garitano, let him get in on it so we can get in and discussing ROI, if you don't mind.
Well, Dave, do I have a choice?
Well, of course you can say, can we put that off till next week? You, of course, have a choice. But I think there's so many questions, and I've been inundated with it because there's both perspectives on this, and I think it's just outstanding that's there. So I'm going to turn on Mike and bring Tony into the discussion, but I think it was really good. Tony made some comments that and Tony, are you there? Well, I thought I had his mic turned on. I'll make sure it's – there we are. Tony, you there?
I'm here.
Oh, good. I mean, you made some comments that has brought a lot of feedback, and the Prophet Doctor made some comments, and there definitely seems to be two schools of thought. And I don't think that our listeners, I think you guys are a lot closer on the topic, but it's the perspective. So let's start off again with the topic of ROI, because I received a bunch of questions about ROI related to investing in technology. So, Andy, you made the statement that you think there absolutely has to be an ROI on virtually anything that comes in. Do you expound on that a little bit, Andy?
It's a fact that any regulated depository, a commercial bank, if they're going to make a decision about how to deploy the resources and capital available to them, and in many respects, the funds come from the depositors, which is under the FDIC insurance, which creates a fiduciary obligation that the bank board has as it relates to the management of those funds. They have to be able to defend that every loan that they make and every capital expenditure that they incur is well supported. So if it feels good, do it is not a reality in that environment. Same thing with Fortune 500 companies or any SEC company. SEC companies are subject to oversight by the Securities and Exchange Commission and the representing the shareholders and the fiduciary obligation the company has to the shareholders. There again, it looks cool and fancy, let's buy it, is not a reality in that environment. Now, mortgage bankers may do that, but that's not how big successful businesses are run. You have to have a thorough analysis that defends the investment, justifies the cost, and demonstrates an anticipated return on investment.
I one of the questions that came in, Prophet Doctor, was you know what? I really agreed with Andy. I understand and appreciate what Andy said, but I agreed with Andy that there's sometimes it's very difficult to measure that thing, and so we sometimes put it in. It feels good. It looks cool, and I want it in the I want it category. But there's sometimes justification. Tony, I know that's the perspective, and I know you agree with the Prophet Doctor. As you and I talked offline, you actually agree with the Prophet Doctor. But what is that other perspective that you're seeing, Tony?
I do. I agree with the Prophet Doctor. I think that you do have to justify every expense, whether you're required to or not. It just doesn't make good business sense to just throw money at a good technology that you may or may not think is cool. My only consideration, or my only thing that I think lenders should consider when they're looking at technology is, how does it solve a real, clear, and apparent business issue? And my thinking is that in some of those cases, that's going to require technology that may be newer, that may be somewhat untested. It's not necessarily going to be technology that the guy down the block is also using, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. To go first or to be near the first person to use a certain piece of technology is not a bad thing, and I think that lenders' reluctance to step out there and be the first or among the first really holds the industry back. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they shouldn't consider ROI. Of course they should. My only issue with the Prophet Doctor is that not all ROI is quantifiable in, nice, neat numbers, and I think that that holds a lot of mortgage lenders back from really advancing.
We're not known as an industry that's a quick adopter of technology, generally speaking. Prophet Doctor, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, there are two conflicting positions. One, the fact that something new doesn't mean it's wrong, or the fact that something new doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. Generally speaking, I don't think being the first is the right place to be, but certainly being the last isn't either. Now, that's just my perspective. That doesn't mean – that's not related to ROI. Being the first to purchase a technology that's a proven and tested and verified solution is fine if you're the first one to deploy it. But that doesn't affect the ROI calculation. The ROI calculation would still be calculated based on the extent to which the new technology generates the anticipated results. It's all prospective in its assessment. You're looking at what could happen and what you expect to happen to generate the ROI.
Okay, I got a question from one of our listeners just texted me. Please ask both of your guests, the Prophet Doctor and Tony, who they respect very much, they go ask them this question. Should the salesperson selling the product, whether it's a new technology, old technology, latest, greatest, you know, God have it, is it the responsibility of the technology company and the salesperson specifically to demonstrate and bring forth that ROI, or is that left on the burden of the buyer? Seems like a rhetorical question to me, but let's start out with you, Tony.
I think it's definitely on the shoulders of the vendor to prove to the lender the return on investment of their technology, whether that be a hard return on investment or an intangible return on investment. I would just caution lenders that what's happening, or what could happen in some cases, is the vendors are desperate to come up with numbers, you know, to Andy's point. And what could happen is you have an LOS vendor that says, I'm going to save you X amount of dollars per loan. Then you're approached by an imaging vendor that says they're going to save you X amount of dollars per loan. Well, the problem with that, Dave, is that if you add up all those numbers, eventually these lenders are going to be doing their loans for free. And that's just not accurate.
That's not accurate.
Vendors do have to put forth an ROI figure or calculation, but it is, I think, it does rest on the shoulders of the lender to really verify that either, you know, hard savings or intangible savings to make sure that it's right for them.
Profit Doctor?
Well, the assessment needs to be objective, and anybody trying to sell something is not going to be objective. So the vendor needs to provide detail and data and cost information, but the lender themselves needs to do the assessment. And I think that the technology assessment needs to be headed up by the CIO of the company, and then the financial validation needs to be done by the CFO of the company. If you're a smaller company and don't have a CIO and a CFO, then you need to borrow one, and we happen to have them for rent. But
this stuff is complicated.
And don't expect that because you're an amazing salesperson and built a business, that means it makes you an expert in technology and an expert in finance, because you're probably not. So get the resources to help make it happen.
I am amazed at the number of questions that are stacking up here. We've run out of time for this segment, but we're getting stacked up with questions on this, and I would love to get into it more. Can we continue this discussion next week and get more into it? Because there are a lot of questions. I think I got some technology people stirred up when I asked that question, and so I think that's good. That's good. Appreciate you both being here. Tony, I think I threw you right in the midst of that one because I know you had some other things we were going to talk about LOS, and we could certainly do that again. But based on the questions, and we want to get to our listeners' questions, we really need to get into the ROI discussion. It's great points both of you brought out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And, folks, you bet. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Excuse me. Good to have you back with us. I'm hiccuping just as I start that. We come off that ad. Sorry about that. Good to have you, Brom, with us. And I'm reading all the emails that are coming in, or the text messages that are coming in on this topic. And so we're obviously getting out there. One of the questions that comes in, and we're going to have to go into it another time. We're not going to do it now. But keep those questions coming in for the Profit Doctor. There's a lot on this. And Alice, interesting, they're saying we're relying more and more on technology as we start managing the regulatory risk. And a lot of questions are in, how can I put a number to that? people seem to connect, Alice, with Andy on the Profit Doctor on the topic of measuring it, and yet they're feeling they've got to have it, which is what Tony's kind of going through. So it's going to be a great discussion, and keep your questions rolling to us. We appreciate it very much. Alice, you and I are going to get a chance to spend some time together this week. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I
there,
am too, Dave. Yep, I'm here. Yeah, in Indianapolis. We're taking the Dave Licken tour through Indianapolis and through Metro Detroit for you to tell listeners what you're going to be talking about. Give them a little teaser because the registrations are still open. Anybody can come.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to be talking about that. Thinking, I know we're going to be talking about the future mortgage banking with all that's going on. What is the direction? What's the strategy? So I tell people you should come because it's the cheapest consulting session. It costs you lunch. It doesn't cost you having to retain us, and it gives us really a good chance to get into a lot of the issues that we're facing. And obviously, we're going to be just touching on them. But the reality is there is a lot to talk about as it relates to strategy. And looking forward, I mean, strategy in your accounting. You know, a lot of people are saying, you know what, I've been thinking about getting out of the business. Is this the time to do it? Is this the time to sell? So we need to talk about M&A. I mean, all the issues that are before us. And then the topic that we're going to be getting into in this segment is really how do I respond to all this regulation that Alice is reporting on? So that's just a bit of a teaser. I mean, in light of all that's facing our industry, what should be your strategy? How should you be going about it? And we're going to be having it. And for those that are listening that will be there, bring forth your questions. I look forward to answering a lot of those questions. We did this. I spoke this last week in Austin at the Austin Mortgage Bankers Luncheon and had a great discussion. Joe, sorry we missed you.
Yeah, Dave, I heard good things about your discussion. I'll be interested to get into that deeper with you.
Well, it was really good. I think probably one of the interesting things that came out, Joe, is during the Q&A session. Well, first of all, I talked about, how can you not talk about our industry right now and not talk about what's going on in a regulatory environment, specifically the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? And in the presentation I talked about, as I will up in Indiana, I talked about how Obama introduced Cordray. He did that at the kitchen table of the Easton home. The Eastons are in their 90s. And the key words that came out of that, and this was a direct quote, how the Eastons almost lost their home to trickery, quote-unquote, trickery and abuse. We've talked about that before on the program, but the specific words were how the Easton family almost lost their home due to trickery and abuse of an independent mortgage broker. Those are fighting words for a lot of independent mortgage brokers that do their darndest to perform well. I was merely at the luncheon, Joe, I was merely saying that it was something that's a fact that we got to deal with this, and this was the attitude that we're having to deal with.
Well, and Dave, as far as the political discussion goes, the question in a lot of people's minds would be, does that change if we have a change in the White House at this next election? And I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that. I'll give you mine.
Yeah, I think by bringing our listeners right up to our pre-show broadcast, our pre-show discussion, because, I mean, I think you brought out a good point. First of all, I want to say this. There's clearly an ideology that's dividing our nation on a host of issues across the board, and we've got to get to come together. And so that's number one. And I think like you and I basically agree on certain things, but we're approaching the short term and the long term somewhat differently. So let's get into that. Joe, your perspective is different from a short term perspective versus a long term perspective. Am I correct?
Well, yeah, I see that the economy and a lot of people have grown accustomed to a legislature that's expending a lot of money, and a lot of people are beneficiaries of that. Current administration has spent way, way more money than we've taken in, which has long-term issues, but short-term, it feels good. And
yeah.
So as we look at what might happen in the future, if the there's a change in the White House, might that spending slow down? We hope so for the long-term benefits, but in the short-term, that might be painful. What will happen to the agencies? Will their demise be sped up if there's a change? Currently, there's been a great effort on the part of the administration to make anyone and everyone qualify for a home that can possibly qualify. And I know the administrations, the agencies are making that a little more difficult with their buyback demands, et cetera, but there's still a big push from the political side to make housing very affordable, and I see that potentially changing. So in the short term, I see the current administration possibly being better than a change.
And see, that's the part I think is the biggest struggle for me, is I see what has the dollars that's been expended? And Alice and Joe, Alice and Andy, we want you definitely to dive into this. Love the profit doctor's perspective, because we're dumping tax dollars into a problem. We just keep throwing more and more dollars at a problem. And I look for dollar, are we getting the benefit? And I appreciate the argument, Joe, that you're saying is that the Obama administration is trying to stimulate things, but if it's not getting us where we want to go, and maybe that's where the discussion needs to go. Is it getting us where we want to go? Have we truly stimulated things? HARP, as we heard from Alice, is by and large, HARP 2 is again a bit of a failure because it's still locked up at the big banks. It seems to be more and more the big banks are gaining and making huge amounts of profit off of HARP 2, and independent mortgage bankers and brokers are unable to really access the program because who can they get it funded through? Who's willing to buy that? How are you going to overcome the appraisal issues, the repurchase issues? There's just so many issues related to that, Joe. So I'll come back to you, and then I'm going to go to Andy at the Profit Doctor, and we're going to go to Alice. So, Joe, how do you really feel that this administration has brought about short-term benefits and changes that are benefiting us?
Well, from the mortgage industry perspective, we've never had lower rates, and that's I know that's the Fed, but there's also some push from the administration side of that. So yeah, that's been a benefit. The HARP 2 might not even come around if the Republicans had been in Congress. So to the extent that any's being done under HARP 2, that may be a plus. So I do see that the current administration, from a feel-good-now perspective, has done fairly well at creating potential customers for mortgage bankers, mortgage brokers, and those making home loans.
Well, I tell you, you won't believe the feedback we're getting right now from our listeners. It is excellent. This is good. They go, oh, thank God we're getting in this discussion. What's interesting, Joe, and I want to, Andy, get ready, jump in here. But the feedback I'm getting right now is the same feedback I got after I spoke at the conference, and I had that gentleman challenge me. He was obviously an Obama supporter and was coming back and taking exception to the comments I made about Cordray, even though I was not dissing, Obama per se. I was just saying this is an observation of the attitude we're going to be dealing with, that we're guilty, so it feels like as an industry, we're guilty until proven innocent. And so go ahead.
I wanted to add one comment regarding the CFPB, and this isn't mine. I was at a conference last week as well, which is why I couldn't make your Osmorch Bankers speech. But people far smarter than I and far more involved in the D.C. environment say that a change in administration is not going to have a big impact on CFPB. They are here to stay.
Okay, yeah.
They are not going to be the friends of the mortgage industry. Their direction is to protect the consumer, and that by nature means they're going to find issue with the mortgage industry. And so don't look for, at least as far as they were saying, don't look for an administrative change to have a big impact on CFPB. They're funded outside the legislature, and Cordray's there for a limited term, for at least some couple years anyway.
Yeah, I think that's whether he's there for a short term, long term, I think CFPB is going to be here for a lot longer than we care. To undo that ball of tape, I think it's going to be a bigger issue. Profit Doctor, I keep teasing about getting you in on the discussion. I love your perspective on politics. Yeah, we're ready.
Yeah, no.
Come on.
Yeah, now? Is it now?
Yes.
So first off, Dave, on the point you and Joe were just making, you have let's look at the stimulus bill, the $1 trillion in stimulus spending. And if you look at the Senate vote, it's like 58 or 48 people thought it was the stupidest thing in the world, and 52 people thought it was the most brilliant thing to do in the world, and it ended up passing, and who knows if it really helped or not. But the point was, it passed because of perspective. It passed because of kind of the gut feel, is this the right thing to do or not? And time will tell, and subsequent economic events will really drive that decision. The problem is, That's not how you make a decision in business. The tools to evaluate spending options are much more finite. We're not dealing with theoretical politics or theoretical economics as it relates to buying a new LOS. It's a much different environment. And while we may want to throw our hands up and say, well, politics just gets to guess, so why don't we just get to guess? Well, because you're accountable to your shareholders and you're held to a higher standard as a business owner than the government is, in my opinion. Now, that one's probably going to stir people right there. But let's circle back, Dave, because one of the points you wanted to talk about is you wanted to talk about managing conflict and how to have a political discussion with a very civil perspective. And I know that you were at a breakfast weeks ago with Rick Santorum. And it's a very cool thing to go and meet with Rick Santorum and get him to tell you your perspective on housing policy, because that's a lot of influence, Dave, and you have that. That's an amazing resource. But as part of that breakfast, you also took a cool picture and you posted it on Facebook, and then kaboom. A lot happened because you posted this picture on Facebook. And so the point is, how do we deal with conflict in a political environment? So tell us about that.
Well, I think that's really what came out of the Austin meeting, the luncheon, was that as I got challenged from the floor on my comments, it was respectfully done, and we really ended up having a very, very good debate. And what I want to foster in our industry, and the reason I'm having this broadcast and really focusing on it, we're going to be talking about it again and again and again as we get through the industry, as we work through this year and this election, is the fact that we got to have the dialogue. And I think there's been just generally people are afraid to get in and post those things. I'm at this event. I'm looking at this. I'm considering that. And here's why. At that Rick Santorum, as a friend of mine who is a big Santorum supporter, has invited me, and I had the privilege of meeting Santorum up in Dallas many, many months ago, way before he announced, and he was back when he was exploring whether or not to run or not. That's always an interesting thing. Am I thinking about running for president? Yeah, I think he probably already decided he was. He was testing the waters, but as he wisely should. So he was out talking to people, and I got a chance, and I asked him a lot of questions on housing. So when he came to Austin here recently and was at this breakfast meeting, wanted to talk about housing and wanted to talk about a lot of, you know, what his policies are going to be, I wanted to see how that had developed. Now, that whole what I learned, we'll get into in another broadcast. But what was most interesting is when I posted that picture of Santorum, and I was sitting on the table right next to his, and he was up speaking, the commentary I got back from dear, very dear friends of mine on the left was, you know, one guy said, Dave, I'm thinking about, you know, disfriending you or unfriending you as, you know, with just the fact that I posted that. I said, very impressed. What I posted was right below the picture was very impressive discussion and some very impressive guy. Well, anyone running for president hopefully is an impressive person. So I didn't think I was making a political statement. But what came forward out of that, it got so heated up because every one of my friends, of course, you know how Facebook works. It is there for everybody to see, public consumption. And it got so bad that Facebook got in and deleted the comments because it got seriously offensive. What that really brought forward was that this whole discussion, the ideological differences in our nation is so intense and so extreme that we have got to come to the point of having a civil discussion. That's why I love having these discussions on the radio and talking about them, because we need to get to the point where we have a civil discussion. And Andy, you're reading a book that, you know, Slouching Towards Gomorrah by Judge Bork. You read a lot. You study on this stuff. You know, is it possible where we're at ideologically, a nation as divided as we are, to have a civil discussion, Andy?
Oh, Dave, you really want me to answer that?
There's a want of hope. I want to hope that there is.
Well, the generation of people that spend their evening watching sitcoms, and that's their primary source of information, are going to very likely own opinions based on how they feel about the opinions. And for the folks that grew up in the video game era that want instant gratification as they win each level of the game, don't want to spend the time to really thoroughly vet the perspective. I mean, if you look at any of the news channels, whether it's MSNBC or Fox Business or Fox News, there's all this background clutter and ticker lines going on the screens, and so there's this massive feedback that we all want to hear. and see, and we don't want to spend the time to really bed down, understand, and dive in to understand the issue to then be able to articulate it. So I think part of the reason we have this almost vicious response back is because people own their perspectives emotionally without the ability to thoroughly articulate their perspective.
Great point.
And without the ability to articulate their perspective, whenever they're challenged, they immediately turn to fight or flight rather than thought and reason. And I think that's one of the reasons I like reading Bork, is that he's an amazing thinker, and he presents his perspectives in a very articulate and well-considered perspective. And I like thinking about that. I like understanding it. I don't want to just feel it. I want to know it, and I want to understand the why.
Well, that's why I think I enjoyed the discussion with Joe earlier and again in this segment, and with you and Alice, is that we really have a hunger to get to an intelligent discussion rather than an emotional discussion. Like you said, owning it emotionally. Alice, what's your thoughts on all this? I'm looking at the clock. We're already blowing through the calendar, the clock, with, you know, and some of the time remaining. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting because both of them brought up where I'm sitting right now in trying to decide. And, Joe, I'm really surprised as to where you leaned. But, you know, you kind of – I go back to, you know, or at least where you were leaning today.
Yeah.
Did I understand that right? Yeah. Because I'm the same way. On one hand, I say, does it make sense to keep with the same administration because, like we did with the Iraq War, we're already in this knee-deep, so we're in an economic war of sorts right now, and what is the best path out? But ultimately, I think Andy's got it right on the numbers that we can't keep pretending that the pain is out there, and we have to live within our means. And nothing, no HAARP 3.0 isn't going to change how many houses are underwater. And it isn't going to change that banks can't buy houses that are severely underwater. Bank A isn't going to want Bank B's underwater house. And that's just a fact, and I don't care how you describe the program or change repurchase risk, that part isn't going to change. So for those of you trying to look just at mortgages and say, how is a change in administration going to impact which administration is going to impact my business, I think either way we go, one way might prolong the agony, and the other way is going to get to the point a lot faster because the CFPB, like you said, is who it is. It's not going anywhere. We will have costs for more regulation, and that's a given, no matter which one is in office. And I'm a little concerned about, in the Republic side, if we loosen up too many regulations that we need, we could end up back in some other program problems. So I'm going to officially say I'm on the fence at the moment.
I'd like to clarify that I believe what I was saying was short term.
Yes,
but I believe we've got to start thinking longer term. I mean, the current administration's thinking very long term from a global warming perspective, from a energy perspective, but very short term from a fiscal perspective.
Yes,
I think we need to start thinking very long term from a fiscal perspective, and that trumps my short term thoughts about the benefits to the mortgage industry of the current policies.
Yeah.
I wish I could just show you the text messages that are flooding in on this discussion. I've never had anything like this. I'm so glad you brought this up as one of them. Keep this discussion going. We need to have this. We want to hear you guys vet it out because you guys are all, you know, very intelligent. You know, one person just wrote, I just Bork's book. I have tremendous respect for his illogical approach. Yet I find myself getting so emotional just reading it. And so there's just all this perspective that's coming in. So, folks, we are going to go back to this. We've got the mortgage professor on next week. He's going to be Jack Gutnick, a good friend, someone that I respect tremendously, and got years of perspective. Will be coming in here. And I know Jack's smart enough. He won't wade into politics. Maybe he will. We'll tease it up there for him, maybe. But he's going to be talking about what he is doing. So very exciting broadcast next week, and then the week after that will be broadcasting from the tech conference. And so we've got some things, but we will be, I promise you, folks, we will be coming back and talking about this more. Andy, Alice, and Joe, thank you so much for wading into this. Joe, I know you're not a flaming liberal, so I'm not worried about that.
Somebody had to argue that side.
Well, someone does, and I think here's the deal. I think the healthiest thing to bring forth a discussion is to try to argue someone else's point effectively, because I think in so doing it, we begin to get the insights into where things are at. Folks, we've run out of time. It's been good to have you with us this week. Please tune in with us. Listen to the Mortgage Professor. He'll be with us. And have a great week. And if you're in Indianapolis area, come and listen to me speak tomorrow at noon, or in the Detroit on Wednesday at 10:30, and then there's a luncheon afterwards. So look forward to talking to you. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you soon.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.